Girl, Zenni is back. I'm super excited to talk about this because I've used them and I love them. Fam, Zenni is an online eyewear shop. We're talking prescription glasses, sunglasses, blue light lenses, starting at under 30 bucks. I cannot tell you how affordable this all is.
And it's so easy. You go to Zenni.com, you pick a frame, you upload your prescription, they ship it to your door. You don't have to worry about appointments. You don't have to go to the store. They're not upselling you at the counter.
No, and they've got this amazing try-on technology that, like, you pick the glasses that you want, you look into your camera, and then, like, you can move around and you can, like, and they move with you. The try-on technology is really what sold me.
And it's also really important. This is your new face.
Yes, exactly. Fam, they are so affordable. I love this talking point. You stop asking, do I really need new glasses? And you start asking, why don't I just get them? I was going to get one pair. I got four.
See, this is what we're talking about. Get the fun ones.
Yes.
Get the pair that only matches, like, your one favorite special outfit. Who cares?
That is great advice, GP.
Do it. For under 30 bucks, like, come on.
I know. They've got over 150,000 five-star reviews, fam, and I'm one of them. So get on it. So, fam, if your glasses are overdue for a refresh, now is the time.
Go to Zenni.com/podcast and use code podcast15 for 15% off your first order.
The styles do sell out, fam, so don't sit on it.
That's Zenni.com/podcast, and the promo code is podcast15.
Yes. Girl, is it still quarantine?
It is. I got news for you. I'm so sorry to break it to you. Breaking news, we're still in quarantine.
Girl. You guys, before we get to the show, let us just remind you gently that if you would like more Jillian and me, head on over to the Patreon where you get like 150 full bonus episodes. We just wrapped up I'll Be Gone in the Dark. We're starting Fear City.
Right.
You guys, it's really living up to what we all expected of Jillian. It's just all mafia all the time.
It's no 7-5, but hey, I'm trying my best.
She's really rising to the occasion, you guys.
My big bit is like, it's just watching home videos. It just feels like I'm right. Watching. That's the bit. I'm killing that bit. I'm digging it into the ground. I'm like punching it into the ground. I don't know why. But anyway, we did Tiger King, Don't F with Cats, yeah. Lorena, The Jinx, The Staircase. We did a whole bunch of shit.
It's every series you've ever wanted us to cover on like HBO or Netflix or whatever. It's there on the Patreon, I swear to God.
Yeah.
But it's also like you can get ad-free versions of these episodes. There's after parties. There's quarantine check-ins. There's ringtones, hang sessions with you and me. I always forget to say this. Some of our live shows, like videos of our live shows are there. Our very first live show is there.
I was going to say, I want to say our first live show.
Yeah.
Scientology. We did Going Clear.
Going Clear. The one that we did for, what's his name? The guy with the long hair, Charlie. What's his name?
Manson, girl.
Charles Manson.
Yikes. Do you even true crime, girl? God.
You guys, it's patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed. Go to our website. Click on the Patreon link.
Yeah.
We got anything else to say before we get... Oh, the merch. Tell them about the merch.
Oh, yeah. We have all this new merch, and we're donating all of the money that we get to charity. All these different charities, and all the information is on our website, truecrimeobsessed.com.
All right. Should we get to it, girl?
Yeah. Yes. 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 I vote yes.
Girl, what are we talking? You guys, I was going to ask Jillian what we were talking about, but I'm going to tell you this right now. We're talking about the Atlanta child murders. It's a 3-episode series from ID. We are doing this in 2 episodes. So you're listening to episode 1 right now. Episode 2 is available right now in ad-free on Patreon. I'm telling you, you want to go and listen to it. It's really, really crazy.
From 1979 to 1981, the city of Atlanta dealt with the unthinkable.
All the children are between 8 and 15 years of age.
The bodies of black children keep turning up in the woods.
And I walked over and it was a human skull.
And the rivers.
This latest death is apparently connected to the others.
More than 2 dozen victims.
The person who did this was a psychopath and a monster.
I was holding on to her body. Sam, what did they do to you?
Families are devastated.
The one person you had, he's gone. And you didn't get to say goodbye.
And long simmering tensions reach the boiling point.
Atlanta was on the borderline of exploding.
It has to be the police. Who else could pull this kind of stuff off?
It could possibly be the Ku Klux Klan killing these black kids.
It was like, okay, they're trying to start a race war.
At the root of it all is racism.
Everybody was a suspect.
Until one big break changes everything.
That's a body hitting the water.
I said, do you know why we've stopped you? Yeah, it's about the murder of those children, isn't it?
40 years later, parents and family members still have questions. Was justice ever truly served?
When you look back over the story, hell no.
Their case never was that well investigated, and there's possibly still a murderer out there.
One day, you know, we might find out what happened.
This one was crazy, girl.
Yeah, so the Atlanta child murders, it's real awful. This first episode is called Into the Woods.
Once upon a time.
Okay, so wait a second. I was going to say, I really don't appreciate them conjuring Daisy's favorite musical at the top of this episode.
Bernadette Peters, no. Unfortunately, is not here.
While we're talking about the tone of this thing, I just wanted to also say that, like, you guys, this is about, like, horrific murders of, like, tens of children in Atlanta in the 80s.
Yes.
The tone of this at the beginning, honestly, it opens with, like, an aerial shot of, like, some sort of, like, statue holding a torch in downtown Atlanta. And the music of it, it feels like it's a promo for the Olympics. It does not feel like a murder documentary.
Today, Atlanta's downtown shines brightly as the capital of the New South.
I think Atlanta right now is a melting pot for entertainment and business.
You look at Atlanta today, it's no city like this city. Hollywood of the South is what they call it because of people filming movies and so much TV here.
Right, because what they're saying is, like, Atlanta is amazing now. It's a thriving major entertainment city. It's the Hollywood of the South, the new Motown of the South. We're seeing TLC. We're seeing all of these, like, very famous, yeah, successful, well-known people. And then it all, like, like the air is sucked, yeah, out of the room because it's like, that's Atlanta today. But let's go back. Yeah. Let's rewind 40 years ago. There is, like, a dark, horrible secret and history that not a lot of people know about. So forget the Atlanta you know now. Great girl, you're thriving. Great, you look amazing. That color looks fantastic on you. But you have a kind of a dark history. And I'm like, okay, here we go.
From 1979 to 1981, the city of Atlanta dealt with the unthinkable. The bodies of black children keep turning up in the woods.
And I walked over and it was a human skull.
And the rivers.
This latest death is apparently connected to the others.
More than 24 victims.
If a sentence were ever to, like, send shivers down your spine.
Right. And because, like, we learned the case was never fully investigated, so many people still have questions and they're all here.
Yeah.
Which is really, like, ugh.
I gotta be honest about something right up front, girl.
What's up?
I did my very best to write everybody's name down and try to, like, keep it. But, like, there are so many people that eventually I'm like, this FBI guy and this cop guy. Oh, and let me say this now and just get it out of the way. All these guys were super, super hot back in the day.
Yeah, everyone's wearing, like, a lot of beige and taupe, but they look good.
Yeah, it's so weird when you think about fashion of the time. You're like, you know what looks great? Beige.
Beige. You know?
So it's 1973. The African-American population of Atlanta is growing and growing and growing, and it continues to grow to this day. And they say that, like, the black community was, like, finally able to elect its first black mayor of Atlanta, Maynard Jackson.
Right. And the first thing he does, he's like, oh, wow, we have to reshape, yeah, this whole police force. And he said, he's, yeah, quoted as wanting more brown people in the police force.
He wanted the police department to become more brown was the term he used. Up until that time, it had been mainly a white force.
The department was still racist, still discriminatory. This I know from personal experiences and things I had to encounter.
He does this radical thing, you guys. Everyone sit down and pull over. I know it's early in the app, but he decides he wants the police force to actually look like the community it's serving.
Now, hold on a second.
I know it's a radical thought. I know. I can't believe he got away with it.
Right. So 5 years after he's elected in 1978, he appoints Lee Brown as commissioner of public safety. And Lee Brown is a black man, that is relevant. Usually we don't do that, it doesn't matter, but at this point it's relevant. And George Knapper is the police chief, and, yeah, he's a black man too. And change is on the way, they can't wait, they're gonna shake everything up and really get some shit done.
Yeah, and they tell us that, like, though Atlanta was growing and changing, for the black population of Atlanta, nothing good was happening really.
Despite the strong economic growth, the black population of the city remains very poor. A serious crime problem develops that makes Atlanta the murder capital of the United States.
Okay, here's my first major issue. We cut to July 28th, 1979. We're at Nisky Lake Road, and somebody tells us,
there's nothing there, isn't it? It's just woods, briars, brush. Somebody's looking for aluminum cans out here in this deserted stretch of road in South Atlanta, and stumbles upon the remains of a decomposing body.
It's basically like a dumping ground for bodies, to which I said, can we just stop having those? If we know where they are, can we put a McDonald's there?
I want floodlights. I want like a big, I could not agree more. I'm like, why? The term known dumping ground should not exist. If it's a known dumping ground, it should no longer be a dumping ground. I'm not crazy. I know I'll never get elected. I know no one gives a shit. I'm a dumb woman, small brain, weak arms. But my God, the term known dumping ground. I'm dying on this fucking hill. And if it was a known dumping ground, maybe that's where I'd be. But it's insane to me that known dumping ground is a thing.
Can we get just like a daily like rounds through the known dumping ground? Can we get a Starbucks up in there?
The floodlights. I want it to look like high noon, 24 hours a day. That's what I want. On a known dumping ground. What are you, nuts? A known dumping ground.
Explain to me why you and I aren't running as like you sheriff, me under sheriff. I think we've got great ideas.
I want more than sheriff. Now I'm getting greedy because I know it's never going to happen. So now I'm like, sheriff. I want more. I feel it. I just want more.
But like we find out that there's somebody on this like abandoned road / dumping ground looking for cans. So they find a body. They call the cops. The cops are there in 2 seconds. They're not there 5 minutes, girl. They find a second body.
They find another body.
I know.
One person is shot, one is strangled, and we learn who they are.
Yeah.
It's 14-year-old Edward Smith and 13-year-old Alfred Evans.
And then Cop Danny says,
the probability was bodies have been dumped there, but nobody really jumped to the conclusion that the bodies had been dumped by the same person. And these are not cases that are going to be front page news.
This is something that is a trend in the series that is something I will never understand. Like, this is the very beginning, and this is when you should maybe start thinking about, like, where you're going to pull over on your drive home, because this is just the beginning of them being like, they're totally not related, you guys. I'm like, excuse me. Like, why don't you want it to be a serial killer if the other option is, like, there are just multiple people committing these murders? Don't you want to find just one and not 20 of these people? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I know the answer is all bad, but you could just be looking for one person and not 20.
The next thing we say is that the police have no leads. I feel like they are standing in the woods looking at these two bodies that they know no one's going to care about when they look at each other and they shrug and they go, well, we got no leads.
So over the next 3 months, two other boys go missing, and it's 14-year-old Milton Harvey, who was found 12 miles away from where he was last seen, and 9-year-old Yusuf Bell.
And this is where they tell us that 9-year-old Yusuf Bell was abducted when he was out running errands. To which I said, why are 9-year-olds running errands?
I know. It just sort of is very telling of what these kids, like, any way to make some extra change and not even like an extra buck. Like, it's very sad, the situations that these kids, 9-year-old kids, were putting themselves in, and then horrible things happened.
But the strange thing about the discovery of Yusef's body, either his feet had been washed or something, and so that initially set off thoughts that somebody may have been abducting these kids in some kind of strange ritualistic religious ceremony.
And then this made me think of Damien, because like they were saying, oh, that young boy, the 9-year-old Yusuf, his feet had been washed. Mm. So they were thinking like, well, maybe the abductions were some sort of like ritualistic religious ceremony. Like they're basically saying like satanic cult or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, that's not actually a thing. You guys, there are actually not satanic cults in the woods stealing your kids and killing them. That just doesn't happen.
No. How about we go to like one guy is doing all of this and not straight to ritualistic sacrifices? Can we just agree that there's probably one person doing this? Do we have to go straight to the ritualistic stuff?
Maybe I actually am the sheriff of this town. It's ritualistic sacrifices!
And I'm here to tell you, incumbent, no. I'm so sorry to interrupt. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I know it's so meaningless. I hope you're doing well in these troubled times.
So we meet Venus Taylor, and we learn about her daughter, Angel. And, this is so brutal. Like, she says to us,
it's amazing how it's been almost 40 years, and yet it seemed like yesterday, because the pain is still the same. You know, nothing has eased the pain. I thought as time go on that, you know, it would be less and less, but it's not. I cried just as much today as I did the day it happened.
And she said that, like, you think when it happens, it's going to get easier. And she goes, nope, I cried just as much today as I did the day it happened. That hit me like a piano. So she says, Angel was just different than any other kind of kid I'd ever met, like, before or since. She said,
when I had her, they said that your baby is the only baby in the nursery that does not cry. And she said, she is just an angel. You need to name her Angel.
So we learned, like, really what an angel was. And so Venus's son says, you know, Angel had a dream that something bad is going to happen.
My son said, well, I'm going to tell you, Mom. Angel had a dream that something bad is going to happen. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. And I started crying. Angel, is someone threatening you? She said, just leave it alone, Mom, please.
Venus, of course, panics, and she's like, Angel, what is wrong? Because Angel's, like, vibe totally changed, and Venus is like, Angel, is someone threatening you? Like, why do you think something bad is going to happen? And Angel just goes, Mom, leave it alone. Don't worry about it. It's just, it's whatever. And I'm like, oh my, as a 12-year-old, to carry that weight of, like,
I know
that something bad is going to happen, and then to not be able to tell anybody about it. And I don't know what Angel knew. We never find out what she knew or what that premonition was, or what it was exactly, and it was just like, ugh.
Yeah, and so March 4th, 1980, Angel is late getting home from school.
And I said, what the hell is going on? Something ain't right. This is not like Angel. I always know where she at. I just knew something wasn't right. I just knew it. So I called the police.
By 6 o'clock, Venus is beside herself. She, like, I mean, how old was Angel? She was, like, 11 or something?
12.
Yeah, like, I mean, for, like, a 12-year-old to not be home from school by 6 o'clock. You guys, it's before cell phones. Like, your kid is out there in the world somewhere, and you have no idea where. As a parent, I can't even imagine that fear.
And when every other day she was home at 3:15, then Venus knows, all right, something is not right. So she calls the cops, and she's begging for help. And we just learn nothing happens for 6 whole days. Not a thing happens.
Girl, how does her neighbor have this information?
I don't know. My information is everyone needs to pull over right now, because the information we hear is I know. Horrifying.
6 days have passed, and I just cried and cried and screamed and cried, couldn't sleep. And then a knock came at my door.
It's worse than anything a mother could imagine. A neighbor tells Venus that her daughter's body was found tied to a tree and that she is being taken to the morgue.
Of course, Venus, the mom, is, like, losing her mind. She goes to the morgue to identify the body. She's talking about, like, the bruises and the beating, and there's, like, ligature marks and a rope burn around her neck. And she's just saying, like, what kind of torture was my child put through? I just can't even. I'm, like, outside my body talking about it.
I know. And so then we meet Vern Smith, who's with us throughout. And he worked for Newsweek, the Atlanta bureau chief at Newsweek. And this is when he says,
I don't think we've grown that much, even in 40 years, to where the value of Black lives of a certain status are that more valued today than they were 40 years ago.
Venus was told, like, this happens all the time to poor Black kids. Like, just kind of, like, get over it. This is what happens when, you know, you grow up like Angel. And so Vern is saying, like, we've been screaming about Black Lives Matter for years.
Yeah.
For years. And in situations like this.
Girl, Zenni is back. I'm super excited to talk about this because I've used them and I love them. Fam, Zenni is an online eyewear shop. We're talking prescription glasses, sunglasses, blue light lenses, starting at under $30. I cannot tell you how affordable this all is.
And it's so easy. You go to Zenni.com, you pick a frame, you upload your prescription, they ship it to your door. You don't have to worry about appointments. You don't have to go to the store. They're not upselling you at the counter.
No, and they've got this amazing try-on technology that, like, you pick the glasses that you want, you look into your camera, and then, like, you can move around and you can, like, and they move with you. The try-on technology is really what sold me.
And it's also really important. This is your new face.
Yes, exactly. Fam, they are so affordable. I love this talking point. You stop asking, do I really need new glasses? And you start asking, why don't I just get them? I was going to get one pair. I got four.
See, this is what we're talking about. Get the fun ones.
Yes.
Get the pair that only matches, like, your one favorite special outfit. Who cares?
That is great advice, GP.
Do it. For under $30, like, come
I know.
On.
They've got over 150,000 five-star reviews, fam, and I'm one of them. So get on it. So fam, if your glasses are overdue for a refresh, now is the time.
Go to Zenni.com/podcast and use code podcast15 for 15% off your first order.
The styles do sell out, fam, so don't sit on it.
That's Zenni.com/podcast and the promo code is podcast15.
Yes.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more, And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Now, it's March 1980, and the police are looking into the murders of four young people. They were all reported missing, they were all found dead, and they're saying that, like, the police are refusing to even entertain the idea that the killings are connected. Again, going back to what my beautiful friend Jillian said earlier, wouldn't it be better for Atlanta if it was one person rather than four crazed murderers on the loose?
I'm not saying anybody wants a serial killer, but when you're right. given the option, like, we can have 20 horrible people running around or one, I'm choosing one every time.
I know. And so we meet this cop, Bob Huffington, and he's telling us that, like, look, the higher ups are saying these aren't connected. We, like the people, like the grunts on the street are saying, like, they probably are.
We kept what was called a homicide book, just one paragraph about each victim. And we started running into more children who were being killed and dumped. We were saying, this isn't right. I mean, we've never had anything like this. I found that there was a significant difference between the last 2 years and that year.
So it's Bob Buffington and Danny Agan, who we met earlier. Bob and Danny yeah. are the cops who are like, so I know, like, our bosses are going to the media saying they're not connected. We super think they're connected. We're actually keeping yeah. a list to kind yeah. of prove that they're all connected. So Bob writes a formal letter. He's doing it right, going up the chain of command. Good on you, Bob. Really trying.
We were saying, this isn't right. I mean, we've never had anything like this. I found that there was a significant difference between the last 2 years and that year. And so I wrote it up in a letter and I sent it to our major.
And the major is like,
he said, you like to work homicide? And I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, well, how'd you like to work auto theft morning watch? He said, if I see another letter like this, that's what you're gonna be doing.
Well, wait, why are you not open to this idea? You're, like, openly threatening the guy who wants to look into this? Like, what value? Right. Like, I don't understand, like, why they would be doing this.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. And so now, like, we get this whole thing about, like, what are the people on the street saying? Like, obviously, all these kids are going missing. A bunch of them are ending up dead. And, like, the rumor on the street is that it has to be the police officers. Like, within the Black community, they're saying it's got to be the cops. Because who else can, like, move into and out of our community unnoticed, you know?
Right. And then on the other side of that coin, it's like, or it's the KKK because,
right.
you know, the civil rights movement happened not that long ago today, especially not that long ago in 1980. So they're yeah. thinking, like, maybe the KKK, who's like this super hateful, racist asshole group who just preaches about violence and killing Black people, like, well, it might be them too.
You would always hear about Stone Mountain is the KKK headquarters. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where they do all the rallies and burn the crosses.
You have to understand that here in Atlanta, this is the Klansman's headquarters here. And so what other better place than to take them here from Atlanta, Georgia?
You guys, why are we allowing this?
I don't know.
I don't understand how the KKK is just allowed to exist. And I was really thinking about this today. And I understand, like, freedom of speech, right? Mm-hmm. If you support freedom of speech, you have to support all freedom of speech.
Fine.
I don't, girl. I'm ready to change that rule.
Freedom of speech is great. Fuck the KKK. That's
totally.
I agree with you on this.
They're a domestic terrorism organization.
Yes.
How are they allowed to do that? How are they allowed to exist and just, like, instill fear in a whole community? You guys!
Like, they're here. It might be them. It's like, why are they even here?
Yeah, and so we learn about another one of the boys that gets murdered. We meet a guy named Kerry Middlebrooks, and he's the brother of Eric Middlebrooks. And, you know, he says,
I talk with Eric on the phone. I love my brother. He loved me. He enjoyed seeing me. And periodically, I'd hear about, you know, somebody getting killed. It really didn't hit me that the people that they were describing dead were kids.
So on May 19th, 1980, Eric's body was found by the police in an alleyway behind a dumpster.
So this is Bob and Danny, the cops with the list.
Yeah.
And so they get the call first and, you know, they're not entirely sure what happened. But then the most important thing they find is there are these fibers right on the side of his sneaker.
So we got down on the body He had on a little tennis shoe. It had a rubber bumper around it, and it had come unpeeled, unconnected. And there was a little tuft of fibers in the lip of the shoe.
And they think, okay, well, maybe this means the body was moved across a carpet.
But the thing that's like what I found so interesting about this was like they tell us at some point this is 1980. So like hair and fiber, like none of that was like an exact science at the time.
Now, bear in mind in 1980, blood evidence was not conclusive. Hair and fiber evidence was not conclusive. But it was evidence and it needed to be processed and handled as important evidence because there was nothing else there that could be used. Bob was very smart in recognizing this and collecting it.
These cops know, like, we have nothing. We have this fiber, and this fiber is going to be important, and it, like, totally is.
Yeah, like you're saying, this is 1980. None of the tests were really conclusive back then, but Bob and Danny are like, this really needs to be processed and considered because this is all we have. This is, like, a new thing. We got to do it. So Bob is pushing this, and, like, he was ahead of his time, full stop, because everyone was like, totally. Okay, girl, with a little carpet hair, like, whatever. But this evidence that's super important is all in the hands of 24-year-old microanalyst Larry Peterson over at the crime lab.
So this blew my mind. I was like, first of all, we meet Larry in a second. He's with us today. And
he's here today. Yeah, yeah.
I know. I'm so in love with him.
And so Larry is like, look.
It was what I call a tuft, a collection of fibers together, sharing similar characteristics. And the fact that it was on the bottom of the shoe, to me, carried great significance because it would indicate to me, this has got to be a recent transfer from some place where he recently was.
He agrees. The fibers on Eric's sneaker are what he calls a recent transfer. And so basically, if they could find where it came from, that's a really, really good start.
So, okay, so put a pin in Larry. Larry's with us the whole time, both episodes.
Oh, Larry comes back. Don't worry about Larry. Larry is
here. Get excited about Larry.
Thank God.
Girl, Zenni is back. I'm super excited to talk about this because I've used them and I love them. Fam, Zenni is an online eyewear shop. We're talking prescription glasses, sunglasses, blue light lenses, starting at under $30. I cannot tell you how affordable this all is.
And it's so easy. You go to Zenni.com, you pick a frame, you upload your prescription, they ship it to your door. You don't have to worry about appointments. You don't have to go to the store. They're not upselling you at the counter.
No, and they've got this amazing try-on technology that, like, you pick the glasses that you want, you look into your camera, and then, like, you can move around and you can, like, and they move with you. The try-on technology is really what sold me.
And it's also really important. This is your new face.
Yes, exactly. Fam, they are so affordable. I love this talking point. You stop asking, do I really need new glasses? And you start asking, why don't I just get them? I was going to get one pair. I got four.
See, this is what we're talking about. Get the fun ones.
Yes.
Get the pair that only matches, like, your one favorite special outfit. Who cares?
That is great advice, GP.
Do it. For under $30, like, come
on. I know.
On.
They've got over 150,000 five-star reviews, fam, and I'm one of them. So get on it. So fam, if your glasses are overdue for a refresh, now is the time.
Go to Zenni.com/podcast and use code podcast15 for 15% off your first order.
The styles do sell out, fam, so don't sit on it.
That's Zenni.com/podcast and the promo code is podcast15.
Yes.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
So by June of 1980, 10 black children have disappeared since the July prior 1979. Seven bodies have been found. Three are still missing. And in the press, the cops are like, there's no connection.
Police Commissioner Lee Brown was saying that these were things that were happening, but they weren't necessarily unusual. And they definitely were not connected. The question was there something else or different going on in Atlanta?
Don't worry. worry about it. This happens all the time. And I'm like, if it happens all the time, we're worrying about it.
But so then three of the moms, because of course, let the women do the work.
Sure.
Three of the moms of the missing kids, they actually form, you guys, they form the Committee to End Child Murders. Girl, I typed that sentence and then I had to sit back and type it again. I said the committee, period, to end, period, child, period, murders, period. That's a committee that needs to be formed.
Okay, people need to be told that they need to stop child murders. Okay, that's where we are. Great. I just want to know kind of what I'm dealing with here.
Yeah.
So finally, after all this pressure from the community, the Committee to Please Stop Murdering Our Kids is formed by these mothers. Like, finally, Commissioner Lee Brown is like, oh shit, maybe I'll start caring. And finally, he's like, okay, we're going to form a task force. And this is just for context. This is a year and about a dozen missing and murdered kids later.
Right. So now we're up to 8 dead kids and 3 kids are missing. And so they say over the next 2 months, 3 more young black boys go missing. It's 13-year-old Clifford Jones. He's then found near a dumpster.
But here's the thing. Our friend Larry Peterson.
Yeah.
Our friend's back because there are fibers. Just like Eric Middlebrook's, the fibers on the sneaker. Like now some of the cops and Larry Peterson specifically are like, okay, now that there are fibers here, the fibers become like the biggest deal later on as these episodes go on. And Larry is screaming about it. And so now I'm screaming about it because I love Larry.
Right. Because the whole idea is that like they're going to use the fibers to connect the cases.
If they're being transported to where they were found, they're being transported in a vehicle of some sort, potentially from a location that would maybe be similar, but they could pick up similar fibers, hairs, or any kind of trace evidence from that environment that could then maybe serve as a linkage between different cases.
In the absence of like any other like leads or anything, the fibers is all they have. So that's how episode 1 kind of ends. And so now we go into episode 2, you guys. It's called Devil's Work. And we are just off and running with more bodies, you guys. So first they find the body of a little girl named LaTanya Wilson, who was so badly decomposed that they couldn't even identify the cause of death.
And then like November 1st, Aaron Jackson disappears. And the news is like,
so far, the killer seems to be striking every 3.5 weeks.
Wow, so the news is saying there's a serial killer on the loose. They are recognizing the patterns, but still the cops are like, I don't know if it's the same guy, you guys. I'm not 100% sure.
This latest death is apparently related to the others, but investigators are stumped.
The thing that I remember most, the sort of slow build-up of a situation where a community becomes slowly terrorized by an unknown danger.
And then we meet Isaac Rogers. And we meet Isaac when he's like outside playing catch with his son.
Yeah, and we find out about his brother. His brother was Patrick Rogers, and they called him Patman. The older brother, Patman, was 16. Isaac was 7. He's like,
Patman, he was my closest sibling. He was more than a brother to me. To me, he was an angel. He was 16 years old, I was 7, but he almost went out of his way to try to shelter me, you know, more so than a normal 16-year-old would.
We find out this guy, Patrick, was a performer.
There are like talent shows abound. And, you know, he was really popular and really talented. And he was trying to get into the music industry. And so Isaac is like, yeah, being in the music industry led him to some unsavory characters. And I'm like, cut to Atlanta today. And they're like, hey, we're pretty great. We're the new Motown. We're like the Hollywood of the South. What are you talking about, these unsavory characters?
I know. It's really sad. You know, he was saying that he was like trying to get discovered. And Isaac is saying to us now, like,
I do remember Patman talking about having some prospects that he thought were promising. He was excited. He thought that he was about to get a break, that something big was about to happen, that he thought that he'd had hooked up with the right person.
He was telling me, like, right before he vanished, that he met somebody who was really going to help him. Like, he felt like he had hooked up with the right person who was going to, like, really get him into the business. And so, like, Patrick walks him to the bus one day. I guess he walks him to the bus every day, and he says goodbye. And then when Isaac gets home from school, Patrick's not there. And he says, like,
I can remember it wasn't panic. You know, we knew what was going on at the time. But it was just, hey, have you seen Patman? Has anybody seen him? He never came home, still didn't panic. The next day, it became more surreal because we know he never stay out unannounced or be somewhere where nobody knew where he was.
And then sometime later, he and his mom were watching the news or whatever, and the police found a body in the Chattahoochee River. And the mom just has, like, the terrifying premonition that she knows it's her son Patrick.
Right, which is like, is there anything worse?
So, yeah, so, like, it's official. It actually is Patman. And, like, Isaac gives us this whole, like, terrible story about how, like...
It was official now. Now your brother's dead. No need to hold out hope. He's a statistic now. You don't know who's responsible. You're 7 years old, so what can you do? The one person you had, he's gone, and you didn't get to say goodbye.
And Isaac's whole thing is like, here's the thing about my big brother, Patrick. He never let his guard down. So Isaac is saying, like, for this to happen, it couldn't have been a stranger.
I know. But remember that Isaac told us that Patrick had told him he had met somebody in the entertainment world who he was, like, convinced was going to help him. So put a pin in that. We're coming back to that.
Right. And he's not 100% wrong that people in the entertainment industry are a little unsavory. Right. And I say that as someone who's in it and who's, like, made a living being in it for quite some time. Like, but the point is, like, everyone is on edge. This is happening more and more. And by the end of 1980, Atlanta has a curfew for kids under 15 years old. So they can't be on the street anywhere between 11 p.m. and 9 a.m.
Yeah.
So they start running this nightly PSA on TV in the Atlanta area.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? And I remember this growing up as a little adorable, hopefully adorable little girl in Queens. And it felt like, I dare you to go outside, little kid. Like, I dare you. It felt like such a threat. And so also a lot of our talking heads are, like, very famous rappers and hip hop artists. So we get Big Boy from Outkast.
Wait, remember when I texted you earlier today? You're like, what about this rapper and this rapper? And I was like, girl, I swear to God, I only know the Indigo Girls.
You don't know Big Boy from Outkast? I was like, you know the song Hey Ya, and you didn't answer me. So Matt, if you could play some Hey Ya real quick, that would be great.
1, 2, 3.
I do know that song.
Yeah, well, you didn't answer me when I texted you about it. So, but Big Boy,
sorry,
but Big,
wow.
But Big Boy from Outkast is like,
it's 10 p.m. Do you know where your kid is? And, like, we be looking at TV like, we home.
Bitch, I'm home.
Right.
Like, because it's like, it's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? And Big Boy's like, no one in their right mind is on the street right now.
Yeah. And I just want to back you up and say, like, watching this PSA is terrifying. The way the guy says it, his voice is terrifying.
Yeah.
One of the other talking heads that I didn't know was like, I told my mom I wanted a BB gun.
Also, yet another bad idea.
Girl, Zenni is back. I'm super excited to talk about this because I've used them and I love them. Fam, Zenni is an online eyewear shop. We're talking prescription glasses, sunglasses, blue light lenses, starting at under $30. I cannot tell you how affordable this all is.
And it's so easy. You go to Zenni.com, you pick a frame, you upload your prescription, they ship it to your door. You don't have to worry about appointments. You don't have to go to the store. They're not upselling you at the counter.
No, and they've got this amazing try-on technology that, like, you pick the glasses that you want, you look into your camera, and then, like, you can move around and you can, like, and they move with you. The try-on technology is really what sold me.
And it's also really important. This is your new face.
Yes, exactly. Fam, they are so affordable. I love this talking point. You stop asking, do I really need new glasses? And you start asking, why don't I just get them? I was going to get one pair. I got four.
See, this is what we're talking about. Get the fun ones.
Yes.
Get the pair that only matches, like, your one favorite special outfit. Who cares?
That is great advice, GP.
Do it. For under $30, like, come
on. I know.
On.
They've got over 150,000 5-star reviews, fam, and I'm one of them. So get on it. So fam, if your glasses are overdue for a refresh, now is the time.
Go to Zenni.com/podcast and use code podcast15 for 15% off your first order.
The styles do sell out, fam, so don't sit on it.
That's Zenni.com/podcast and the promo code is podcast15.
Yes.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
So we learn as we're moving into 1981, the murders are increasing, and not just like the murders, but like I kind of couldn't understand what they were trying to give us with this statistic here.
And then you go into 81, and then the space of when a child was missing and then when he was found, it began to get closer and closer. You know, like first it was like every 2 months, and then it was like every 2 weeks.
They're saying the frequency was increasing. The point is he's kidnapping and killing more and more children. So they're being found sooner than the 3.5 weeks that we originally thought. And so Danny Agin, who's one of the cops who actually cared, Bob and Danny are like duo.
Yeah.
He's like,
this investigation revealed to me that the person who did this was a psychopath and a monster. This guy is vicious. He's evil. He's a threat.
The person who did this, I'll say it. I'll stand up and say it. The person who did this was a psychopath and a monster. He's vicious. He's evil. He's a threat. And I'm like, thank you, Danny. God, can Danny run the fucking press conference?
You know what? I'm going to let Danny be your undersheriff. I think you and Danny would make a great team.
Danny's retired. Danny and Bobby are fine. I want more women. Danny, like, thank you for caring, but I don't need another white guy on my force.
Great. So January 5th, another kid goes missing, and we learn his name is Luby Getter. And this is the first kid that's gone missing since the FBI has been involved. And one of the FBI guys is like,
the powers that be got together and said, you know, maybe we ought to search some of the dumping grounds in the Atlanta area. The Atlanta Police Department knew where the dumping grounds of bodies were.
You know what I think we should do? We should actually go search some of those dumping grounds in the Atlanta area.
Because there are so many of them, every dumping ground. And I'm like, cue the floodlights. I just want to hear that sound. When they all turn on, they make that stupid sound.
Girl, did you catch the name of the road the dumping ground is on?
Did I?
Red Wine Road. I was like,
how did I miss that?
I don't know. I was like, wait, so you're telling me that the dumping grounds are on Red Wine Road? Just open a bar. Just open a bar on Red Wine Road. It sells itself.
You want to go down to Red Wine? But that's hard to say when you're hammered. You want to go down to Red Wine? It's not really going to work.
Just open a bar called Floodlights on Red Wine Road, and we won't have to do this anymore.
Open a bar called Floodlights.
So they go into this dumping ground on Red Wine Road. They find a body, then they find another body, and they're like, yeah, this is like, we are in the middle of a murder investigation. Like, let's go.
And finally, FBI Joe, I don't know what changed, maybe the endless amount of bodies that they kept discovering in the same place.
Like, by accident?
But finally, FBI Joe is like,
that was the moment that we said, yeah, we're on now. This is it. We're in an active murder investigation. A serial killer's out there. Time to strap it on and get going.
Okay, enough is enough. This is an active fucking murder case. They're ready to go.
So, you guys, we're back to Isaac Rogers. Remember, he's the one, his brother is Patrick Patman, the performer. So he has this insane story, girl, about one night, he says he goes to the neighborhood store, but then we find out that the neighborhood store is actually just the apartment of this woman named Willie Mae who sells candy to the kids.
Miss Willie Mae, excuse you. She's the candy lady.
She's the candy lady.
Isaac says she was the sweetest lady, and I'm like, oh, what a cute unintentional pun. It's really sweet. And he doesn't mean it. Like, he's just like, she was actually the sweetest lady, but she was like a matriarch figure. Like, everyone loved Miss Willie Mae. I love Miss Willie Mae.
I love Miss Willie Mae too, but like, he's 7 years old and he's out after dark. Like, I just hate it.
And his brother's missing.
Yeah, I know, right? I think even at this point, they know the brother's dead. Like, they know that like his brother's been killed. And so he tells a story that he goes to Miss Willie Mae's house for candy. And she lives like on the upper level of their housing development.
Right as I get ready to walk down the stairs, this guy steps out and he blocks me from going down the stairs. And so immediately the panic set in. And so I turn around and I ran back to Miss Willie Mae door.
Immediately, he's like, I knew what was going on. I knew my brother had been killed by some creep who's like kidnapping kids. And he just immediately thinks it's the kidnapper. And he like runs back upstairs to Miss Willie Mae's house.
And he's screaming. He's like, oh my God, it's him, help. Like, cause this guy's like menacingly walking up the stairs, but very slowly and deliberately, like, fuck off.
It's like a Michael Myers thing is what I was thinking. You know, like in like scary horror movies.
They just casually walk, like you're running and panicking. Like, no, you're right. You should panic.
Which is what Isaac does. He runs back to Miss Willie Mae's door. He's banging on the door. for it. He's like, it took her forever. This guy follows him up the fucking stairs. Miss Willie Mae opens the door, and like this creep is just standing there like 5 feet staring them down. But he gets a good look at the guy, and he's like,
I remember his afro was uneven. It wasn't crispy. I remember the rimless little glasses, and he had on his tweed suit coat with the patches on the elbows. I hate that jacket to this day.
You know, his hair was kind of crooked, and he was wearing one of those tweed jackets with the elbow patches, and I got like a good look at this guy, and he went away and just put a pin in that.
And of course, Miss Willie Mae is like, I got you, it's all good, like takes him in, hugs him. It's like this whole beautiful moment, but it's like beautiful and horrifying at the same time, because he like looks at Isaac, he looks at Miss Willie Mae, and he just like disappears into the night. And Isaac says,
I'll never forget him. I can have Alzheimer's, but I will remember that guy.
I will remember this face until the day I die, with that stupid hair and those stupid patches on the elbows, which I never liked either. And he was like, I will never, ever forget this guy.
I laughed my head off when he said I could have Alzheimer's and I'll remember this guy forever. Like, I thought that was like the best way. Like, it was so terrifying and
it was so real.
Yeah, totally. So the months go by, you guys, and like the body count is just building. And so as they're continuing to find these bodies, they're finding more of these fibers. Remember, they found like the fibers on the shoes of one of the victims. They're finding these fibers. They're carpet fibers.
And they keep sending them to our boyfriend, Larry, at the lab.
Who I love, and he comes back. Yes.
24-year-old Larry at the lab is like, give me the fibers. His life is fiber. They're the smallest little things. And then like one of the cops, Bob, is like, these fibers are going to be a big deal in a couple years. I know the technology makes no sense right now. I'm super ahead of my time. Just focus on these goddamn fibers. I promise they'll mean something. And Larry's like, girl, okay. And so that's where we are with the fibers. And that's what you missed on Glee.
Right. And so the media is starting to report that they think that the cops internally are using the fibers to connect the bodies. And so all of a sudden, the bodies stop turning up in the woods or behind like a dumpster. They are turning up in the river. And they're saying,
the perpetrators always follow the news, always follow these stories. And as a result, then started to throw the bodies in the water to wash the hairs and fiber evidence off of them.
Because, as someone tells us, they always watch the news.
Right. Exactly.
Especially in the 70s, 80s, whatever, like pre-internet, they're always doing these terrible things and then sitting home and reading the paper and turning on the 6 o'clock news and waiting to hear about themselves because they are so empty and dark inside. Did I take a turn or?
It's a good turn. So this is when Agent Mick McComas comes up with this idea, like that, you know what? He's dumping bodies in the rivers. We're going to stake out the bridges.
I lived on a river. And I do know that when you throw something off the bank of the river, that if you don't get it into the mainstream, then it's going to come right back to the side. So I said, you know, I wonder if this guy is tossing them off a bridge.
And so basically, like, what they do, they have this whole system worked out where, like, two cops will be underneath the bridge, and then on either end of the bridge, they have these, like, chaser cars. So if they ever hear, like, a splash in the river that sounds like a body being dumped, then they radio up and they're like, oh, we just, like, whatever, the guy on the bridge just dumped a body, go get him.
And the thing is, this all sounds real well and good now, but when Mike and his partner came up with this plan, they're like, I live by rivers. I totally know how it works. Maybe he's dumping bodies off bridges. And so they go to FBI Joe.
And they said, we want to cover the bridges. And I said, well, how do you know you're going to have the right bridges? And they looked at me. They looked down at me because I was sitting down. They said, well, do you dumbass, do you have a better idea? And I says, not really, not at the time. Go for it.
Hey, dumbass, got a better idea? And he was like, noted. I certainly don't. Go for it. I love the idea. Even FBI Joe, who's here, like Mike and his partner are not here, but I love that FBI Joe was like, they call me a dumbass, and they were absolutely right to do so.
I'm with Joe. It doesn't make any sense how they do this, but you guys, they end up picking the right bridge because they've got 30 days on this plan. And once that 30 days is up, it's over. Like, they're getting nowhere with this. And so on the very last night of this operation, Mike McComas and his partner are under a bridge. They hear like a huge splash.
At 2:55 in the morning, what do we say? Nothing good happens at 3 a.m. Unless you're a witch like myself and your coven happens to be doing some shit. Don't worry about it. The witching hour.
Yeah.
But it's 2:55 a.m. There's a splash. And one of the agents is like,
Campbell, here's a splash. And Campbell was a high school swimmer. And he said, that's a body hitting the water. He knew what a body sounded like. And he looked up and he saw a light on a bridge. And he radioed to the policeman, the rookie on the other side, is there a car on the bridge? Yes, he's just starting to move.
I swam in high school. That is totally a body hitting the water. I know what it sounds like when a body hits the water, and I'm like, okay, God.
I know. What a weird thing to like realize in the moment, you know, too. You know what I mean? So they radio up, and they're like, we heard a huge splash. Is there a car on the bridge? And they're like, actually, there is. And he's pulling away. He's pulling away from the side railing of the bridge. Like, this car had been stopped in the middle of the bridge at the railing. And so they're like, all right, like, follow him. Let's get this guy. They follow this guy for 2 miles.
But they don't do, it's not like the woo, it's no sirens, they're not speeding, right. They're just like, he's going slow and creepily, so right. We'll go slow and creepily too. And I'm like, how is it not like Saturday night at a gay bar on that fucking bridge? I want confetti, right. I want sirens, I want shirts off, I want chaos, I want beautiful shirtless chaos on that bridge, and I see none of it.
If you believe in life after love.
I just don't know why they're following his lead slow and creepily down the bridge. That's what I don't get.
And they follow him for like 2 miles. They finally pull him over. And you guys, this made me gasp out loud. The cop goes over, like walks up to the driver's side window and says,
I said, do you know why we've stopped you? And he said, yeah, it's about the murder of those children, isn't it?
So, you guys, this is where we're ending our episode one. Episode two is available right now and ad-free on Patreon at the $5 level. You guys, this gets bananas. We figured this was like a good cliffhanger moment, right?
Yeah, when someone says, of course I know why you stopped me, because I killed all those right. kids. Like, yeah. I kind of want to know what happens, and I'm here.
Stay tuned, girl.
Stay tuned.
You guys, we did episode one of, girl, what is this called?
It's a little confusing because there are 3 episodes of this, but it's our episode one. So it's like our first part of the coverage of the Atlanta child murders on ID. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well said, girl.
Thank you. I still, there are just ellipses and question marks in my head. Like, oh, did I do it? Great.
Well, listen, you nailed it. You guys, as we said, episode two is available right now and ad-free on the Patreon. It's where you'll also find over 150 full bonus episodes of everything from what, girl? Like Making a Murderer, Don't F with Cats,
Tiger King, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, Fear City,
McMillions.
Did we say The Jinx?
The Jinx. It's every series you've ever wanted us to cover. It's right there. This is always the thing where I'm like, we don't have to tell them what's coming up next because this is coming up next.
Oh, the answer, the response to, yeah, it's about all those kids I kidnapped and murdered. That's why. Right. That's how we start the next episode. The answer, like what follows that? He didn't technically he was like, yeah, probably because somebody murdered those kids. But I read it as the subtext is, do you mean all those kids I kidnapped and murdered?
Exactly.
That's what he said.
That's it, girl. Tell them where they can find us.
They can find us at truecrimeobsessed.com. That's where all the merch is. We have brand new merch. All the money's going to charity. Don't even show me that money. I don't want it. We're donating it. All the episodes are our calendar of like what's coming up next on the regular feed.
Fully updated, you guys.
Fully updated. I know, because I called Steve out unintentionally on the Tuesday live. I was like, you guys, we're doing Athlete A. It's on the calendar. And Steve commented. He was like, sorry, I didn't update it yet. So I didn't mean to. That was like an accidental call out. But all of that. And then you are at Patrick Hines on Twitter and Patrick Hines on Twitter and Patrick Hines _ on Insta.
And you're Jillian with a G on all the things. Oh, you guys, on Tuesdays at noon, we're going live. We're calling it Ladies Who Lunch on Instagram, where we're just like hanging out and talking true crime and the episodes and whatever. Come join us.
Yeah, it usually rains where I am, which is weird. That's been
that's
a trend
true.
That happens.
It's usually witchy.
God is usually like girls. And I'm like, girl, I know. And she's like, girl. And I'm like, girl. It's a very, we have a conversation every Tuesday. we have a thing.
You guys, no preview this week, so just stay tuned for the outtakes, and we love you.
We love you. Thanks for hanging. We'll see you next week. And we'll see you like 10 times in between, at least.
Exactly. At least. All right, bye.
Bye.
Wouldn't it be great if Bernadette Peters had been the narrator for this, though?
If she is everywhere. Like, I feel like most of the time, the answer is, unfortunately, Bernadette Peters is not here.
Totally.
I always want Bernadette Peters to be here, and it hits even harder now, Into the Woods. Unfortunately, there's no Bernadette Peters.
So, Sheriff, you've got the floor.
He says his afro was uneven. He was like, it wasn't crispy. And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but I believe Isaac. When he says that is a bad fucking look. Also, don't be a murderer and don't be a creep and don't chase a 7-year-old up a flight of stairs in a creepy way. He's also named Mike McComas as a half Irish person. I really resent the Mick McComas. His name is Mike.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.